and welcome to the Morning Drive. This is Donna Todd Rivers, and I'll be with you for about the next 58 minutes. You're listening to us on 89.7 WTBR, Pittsfield Community Radio, and you're also watching us on PCTV, channel 1301 on your Spectrum dial. And you can always catch up with this morning show or any other Morning Drive show by going to pittsfieldtv.org. So as many of you know, I have a real fascination with Berkshire history and just am immured and in love with all the culture and history here that we have in Berkshire County. So I'm bringing you a series of shows from all kinds of locations all over the county to give you some ideas of where to spend some of those beautiful Saturday or Sunday afternoons when you're looking for something special to do. With me today is Erin Hunt. She is the curator, and Heather Kowalski, who's the executive director of the Bidwell House Museum. It's a historical house museum. It is out in Monterey. I sort of said out like it was far away, but it's not. And it's a really great place to go. So Erin and Heather, welcome to the show. Nice to have you both.
Well, thanks for having us. We're happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about doing this particular show because I think, because it's in Monterey, I don't mean to put it that way, but you know, I think people don't think about the Bidwell House Museum. And I think it's an incredible part of our Berkshire County history. And it captures a moment in our history that we don't have a lot of places in Berkshire County that sort of captured this period in time. So Heather, you want to tell us a little bit about the Bidwell House Museum?
Sure, sure. So the Bidwell House was built around 1760 by a man named Adonijah Bidwell, who was the first minister of what was then called Township Number 1, which is today's Monterey and Tierringham. And the house stayed in the Bidwell family for close to 100 years. It went to his son, then his grandson. It was sold out of the family in the mid-1800s. It became part of a logging company. It was part of an art school for a while. And then and became a summer home as well for some people. And then in 1960, two men came along, Jack Hargis and David Brush. They had friends in the Berkshires. They decided to buy a home up here. And they were dress designers from New York. And so they had a lot of friends in the antique world, in the museum world. And after they bought the house, they decided to do a little bit of research about local history, the history of the home. And in their research, they discovered the probate, otherwise known as the death inventory, of Adonijah Bidwell. And they basically spent the next 20, 25 years using that as a shopping list to purchase things for the home. So the collection that we have now, which was left to us in the 1980s, the museum was, there was a nonprofit that was created and then the museum opened in 1990. The collection that we have is basic, it's not really Bidwell family items, but it is very similar to what Adonijah Bidwell would have had because they basically tried to buy what was listed in his inventory when he died in the 1780s.
To me, that's incredibly fascinating, right? Yeah. And I think, in any history of the homes, you know, the special properties that are here on the Cape, as I interview people and we talk about the histories, yep, we do see the homes sort of losing, coming out of the family. Then having this period of really unique use, you know, that's very specific to what the community needed at the time.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And you're not the first historical house who actually has some time with some sort of art museum or art school or even a school for children. It's like really interesting. You look at the histories.
Right.
But to have these two gentlemen really fall in love with the house and to do that, it's pretty extraordinary.
Yeah. I think so. I know we did. We had a little bit of a celebration of the two of them a couple of summers ago because it's just, you know, we wouldn't be here without them. And they're great guys. I mean, Erin probably could speak a little bit more about Jack and David. You know, Erin's the one who does all of our tours when people come in and stuff. And so she knows a lot of that history. But I mean, they were both really interesting guys.
They were. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, and David too, one of the, David was like a fabric designer, and so we have some really beautiful textiles in our collection that are because of him. We actually have some bed hangings, curtains and bed hangings in the main bedroom that he made, and they look amazing. They're these beautiful tree of life.
They look very similar to something that you would have found in a house, an old wealthy house at that time, but he did all of the work himself, and they're just stunning. People are always shocked when they hear that.
it's just
amazing.
So Erin, tell us a little bit about these two gentlemen, a little bit more about them. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, definitely. So, and they're both just incredibly talented. They met when they were in art school at Parsons in the 1940s, and they were both in the fashion industry, and did some really amazing worked with some really great companies. And when they took this house over, their goal was to kind of restore it as accurately as they could. Like Heather said, they used that probate inventory, which is sort of a list of everything Adonijah owned. And they used that for kind of the objects that they were filling the house with, but also did a lot of did and they really did a lot of the work themselves. But she had mentioned that David did some of this textile work, and he sort of kind of cycled out of the fashion industry and really focused on textile reproduction and restoration. And that's sort of what he did. He had some really kind of interesting clients. He worked with a lot of museums and some really kind of high-end stuff. And so he was doing that kind of his job, but also for the house with, she had mentioned these bed curtains. He did this really beautiful lace-stitch rug. He did all of these pieces to kind of replicate the textiles that the Bidwell family would have had here at the time, and using kind of period techniques and materials and everything. And so they started out with using this house as a second home, as many New Yorkers did and still do. And David ended up living here full time. Jack was still kind of going back and forth between here and the city. But this house really became such a core part of their life. Like, this was really such a focus for them, and they did such an amazing job. And the house is really still very intact in terms of how they had it set up and the way that they kind of what they had worked on. So we're incredibly lucky that the house fell into the right hands.
Yeah. No, that's incredibly true because a lot of times houses are saved by groups of citizens who come together after the town meeting that says, oh, that this property is going to be destroyed or a private citizen can no longer take care of it. They abandon it. And then there's these citizens who sort of come together and do it, but it requires so much money and so much fundraising. And to just have these two individuals come in who have the wherewithal and the means to at least get this project started and to really spend all those years, decades on this home, it's pretty extraordinary. It really is an extraordinary story.
I agree. And then when they died and left the house to a nonprofit, then two of their friends, Bill Brockman and Jack Jefferson, were sort of like the founding board members. And so they did in the late 80s an enormous amount of work to make sure that the nonprofit was created and get the house to a point where you'd have a board of directors and a curator and all of that kind of stuff so it could open as a museum in 1990. And so, they had it was an amazing amount of work that Jack and David did, but then they left the house and then their friends continued their vision. And so we wouldn't be here without them as well, without Bill Brockman and Jack.
Yeah, it's an incredible, it really is an incredible story. So, of course, I have to address your background because I did say something to you prior to coming on the show. What room are you in, and what is the extraordinary set of china that's behind you?
So the room that we're in is actually part of a later addition on the house. As Heather mentioned, the house itself is from the 1760s. This addition is probably more around the 1840s when Adonijah's grandson owned the house. And it has a slightly more kind of contemporary feel than the rest of the house. And so we actually use this as sort of exhibit space for exhibits, kind of, separate from how, kind of interpreting life in the 18th century. And so you can even see like contemporary lighting and everything. So it's a really, it's kind of a great space for us to be doing this. The backdrop behind us in this great corner cabinet is a set of this kind of Chinese import Canton ware. That was something that was very, very popular at the time. It's sort of, kind of what we think about as, kind of what became kind of Blue Willow, kind of that kind of design. And this set is actually on loan from the Monterey Historical Society. We have a really great relationship with that. It's been on loan here for a long time. But this is something that the Bidwells would have had a set very similar to this. It would have been something that they would have been using on a pretty regular basis. So that's what's directly behind us there.
It's gorgeous. One thing you said that really intrigues me is that the house started in the 1760s, right? In the beginning, with the first Minister Bidwell. And then he had generations that lived in the house. And that also is a little unique in the Berkshires, to have that sort of passing of a house for at least a couple of generations that really capture life in the Berkshires and life during those periods of time through each generation. And as you said, one generation actually built the room that you're in as an addition. So how does that sort of make your museum a little more intriguing, and just capturing different different lives in different parts of the centuries?
Well, I don't know, do you want to speak to that? Since what you talked about on the tour.
Oh, good. Look at that.
And so the house itself, the focus of the main part of the house is Adonijah Bidwell and his time here. And then we kind of loop the fam, the next generations kind of loop their story into it a little bit. Because his son, after Adonijah passed away, his son took over the house, Adonijah Jr. And we talk about him more in terms of kind of the alterations he made to the property and to the house. He built another, not this addition, but a different addition on the house that is not part of the tour. It's actually our offices. And then he became a dairy farmer. We talk about the changes he made in terms of, kind of farming and the use of the land and everything. His grandson, who's the one who built this addition that we're in, was actually super interesting. He could be an entire hour-long himself, so it's like we won't go too far down that rabbit hole. His name was Barnabas Bidwell, and actually something to kind of throw out there for people who might be listening and viewers and everything, deeper dives into kind of these family stories, on our website we have this blog series called Bidwell Lore that we've also been doing as an email series that does all of these super deep dives into all of this. But his son or his grandson, Barnabas,
John.
You know what? I haven't been doing tours yet this year. So ignore Barnabas, but he is super interesting. Other son, John Devotion Bidwell. So John Devotion Bidwell was the grandson. I know I started like, and as I was talking, I was like, wait a minute, whose office was that?
I love that.
There were a lot of
things. It's not your personal family tree, so it's a lot.
So John Devotion Bidwell was the one who built this addition that we're in. And he really kind of expanded the farm. And really, it was this big operation that there, he kept the dairy farm, but there was also a tannery and a cider house and a blacksmith shop. It was this really very comprehensive operation. But he also was doing work for the town. He was one of the first selectmen. He kind of held different offices. And so he built this addition as sort of a home office. So he could be managing the farm while also conducting business for the town, that they could come up and visit him in his office. Because where we're located, for anyone who hasn't been to the Bidwell house, so we're on top of a mile long dirt road on the top of a hill. We're, a couple miles from downtown, where downtown Monterey is now. So at the time it would have been kind of a big drive for him, horse and carriage, not car, obviously, going back and forth between the house and the town. So having his office here made a lot of sense. He was managing the farm. So,
As I listen to Aaron talk, Heather, it really comes to mind how important this particular family was probably to the development of that township and to Monterey and Tarringham. They must have been an incredibly prominent family. But the original minister, Bidwell, obviously they had some wealth. Did he come from another country with wealth, or?
Well, so he came from Hartford, Connecticut, actually. So he was the youngest of four children. His dad was a merchant, and his father actually died at sea about a month before Adonijah was born. So he never met his father, but they had family money. The Bidwells had originally come from England in the 1600s, ended up in Hartford, and his father had a number of brothers. So there were quite a few Bidwells in Harvard, or excuse me, in Hartford. But yeah, so he came from money. Like I said, he was the youngest of four. His mother was able to keep the family business after his father died, which is very unusual in the early 1700s. And himself was born in 1716. So, so this was, you know, a time when most women were not in charge of their own businesses. So he eventually went to Yale, and then did it, you know, he was a minister on a naval expedition up to Lewisburg, which was a whole other rabbit hole. You can go down on our Bidwell Lore blog if you want to read about that. That's the one of the only times that Bidwell kept a diary of what he was doing. So he didn't really seem to keep one here when he was minister, unfortunately. But so he did that. He was a minister over in Hillsdale, New York for a little while. And so he actually moved to this area around 1750. I think it was 1750, yes. Became the minister, lived on the property then for probably 10 years before he built this house. But he did come from money. So he did have some family money. So, and we have a lot of porcelain and pottery in this house, which is possible that the porcelain and pottery he had may have come from his family because they were merchants in the Hartford area. But yeah, so he was, and at the time too, ministers were expected to be kind of well off. You know, they were supposed to be it was a blessing from God, and, you know, they weren't sort of these, you know, aesthetic, very simple living people. You know, they were meant to be like some of the wealthiest people in town.
That's true. They were leaders. If you're just joining me right now, you are listening to 89.7 WTBR, Pittsfield Community Radio. You may have just turned on your channel 1301 on your spectrum dial, and you are now watching us on PCTV. My name is Donna Todd Rivers. This is The Morning Drive. With me today are two guests, Aaron Hunt, the curator, and Heather Kolowski, the executive director of the Bidwell House Museum. It's located on Art School Road in Monterey. It is an incredible museum. It really captures life in the 18th century here in Berkshire County. And it's unique in that sense because there's not a lot of museums in the Berkshires that capture this particular period of time. So one thing you did say was that it's on this long road to get there. And it's really kind of remote. And the whole history of how its preservation started, which if you haven't been watching or listening, you may want to catch the first part of the show. You can do that by going to pittsfieldtv.org. But just the history of how it started to be preserved is pretty interesting. And that there were some gentlemen who are really important in making that happen. But life in the 18th century in the Berkshires, what was it like?
You know, I think it was tough. You know, people came out here. They were, I think, required to set up a certain amount of acreage and a farm, right? I think you might remember more than you did before.
I've already established. I don't remember the word. So, but there were certain requirements in terms of, you know, how these towns were going to be laid out, in terms of having a minister, in terms of having certain, you know, certain ways that they were laid out. And this was around the time, you know, a lot of the towns in Berkshire County were kind of starting, you know, kind of starting to be settled around this time. So life, you know, life was not easy, but also, you know, with where we're located, we're kind of centrally located between the Hudson Valley and the Connecticut River Valley. And these other areas that already had, you know, kind of
they had settlements,
settlements at that time. So it wasn't, you know,
it's remote, but not as remote as you might think it was, you know.
No, and I'm glad you mentioned that because that actually is true. It was really a place that sort of made sense as other settlements in those river valleys expanded. Right. It sort of made sense to travel in that direction. Of course, we think of it very differently today. Because in Berkshire County, we sort of have Pittsfield as what they call the heart of the Berkshires. So we only kind of think of things going from that direction. But quite frankly, Monterey and Terringham in that area, at that period of time in the 18th century, it made sense that things were expanding to that area.
And there were roadways that were kind of passing through here anyway to get from to those different river valleys. So it did make sense for people to settle down here.
And I think sometimes people forget that there were settlements that early here.
Yeah, definitely. Were you going to say something,
Eric? Well, I was going to say also with where we are located. So this is actually where the original settlement for Township Number 1 was, mm-hmm. Which is always kind of a shock to people because it's, you know, even in terms of Monterey, we're pretty remote within Monterey. But part of the road that comes out here actually used to be part of the Boston-Albany Post Road. So oh, wow. This was sort of on the main drag. Like this was sort of a much more central location at the time than it is now. So yeah.
That's really actually interesting that it was part of that road. It's really fascinating. Of course, this would be something I would love to do in my copious spare time or maybe upon retirement, but to really sort of research how towns developed. And this is Township Number 1. It's mm-hmm. on this road, right? This post road. So how does that not become Pittsfield? Do you know what I mean? Like how it's just really interesting, like how towns grow and how populations migrate. I find the whole thing very fascinating, as you can tell. I know I'm a little bit of a history geek. What can I say? Which is why you're on the show. I'm a history geek.
And the Massachusetts Bay Colony was sending people out here. Like they wanted, they created these townships. They wanted people to come out. And because I think they didn't want it to become part of New York. I think that was part of it. They wanted them to like settle down and create towns in the Massachusetts Bay Colony. So, you know, there were a number of settlements out here at that time.
Well, we do appreciate them. We do appreciate that they did that. We're appreciative that Berkshire County is in fact part of Massachusetts and not New York. So thank you to those folks way back in the 18th century who thought of these things. It's incredibly important. But you did say something really interesting. You mentioned the acreage. So one thing about the Bidwell House Museum, which I find also makes it a little unique, is the amount of acreage you actually have. Yeah. And that was preserved and not broken up during stages of maybe, you know, monetary need of previous owners. Mm-hmm. So can you speak to the acreage?
Yeah, well, we have right now we have 194 acres. So Adonijah Bidwell did not have this many. I think it was Adonijah Jr. that
expanded
it.
And then I don't know if
Harvest
and Brush purchased any extra land.
Yeah, it kind of fluctuated over the years. Yeah, but I mean, it always, you know, it's always been a pretty
sizable.
Parcel.
Yeah. Right. And so now, you know, we have 194 acres. And then a few years ago, we actually put about 175 acres into a conservation restriction. And so the land will be woods and trails like in perpetuity. No one could buy the Bidwell House if we decided to close and put a house development here. You know, it's like this is going to be preserved land, and it's great. And we have, you know, like 6 miles of trails. One of our trails, the Royal Hemlock Trail, is actually based on a path that people that this, you know, settlers and the native indigenous people used to walk just north to south from here to Tieringham. And so it's great. And we have gardens as well. And those are open every day. So people can come and hike and walk free of charge 7 days a week. And we love being on all this land. And it really helps people imagine, I think, what it was like in the 18th century, being out here at the end of this dirt road in the woods, you know, and it's really beautiful.
Yeah, I do. I think you get the feel of what it was like during that period of time.
Yeah.
But the fact that you had the walking trails, I think that's a really important piece because, you know, if you're watching or listening to this show and all of a sudden it's a beautiful Saturday or Sunday afternoon, or you have some time off in the middle of the week and you just want to get out and walk, I think the ride, you know, to that area, to Monterey, is actually really beautiful.
It is.
It just, you know, you get to a point where you just sort of, the world opens up, if you will. I always feel that way too. Sometimes like there's certain parts of like when I go into Williamstown it just kind of opens up. The world feels like it's opening up a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
But I feel that way going south as well, particularly through that area. So if people want to take a day, they could just come out and you have some walks. Are they, what condition are the walks in and are they easy to navigate?
Yeah, they're pretty easy. We don't have a lot of big elevation changes. So, I mean, they are, you know, they're in the woods, they're paths in the woods. So we do always recommend that people wear like proper hiking boots and things like that. But yeah, they're all, we don't have anything that's like expert level trails or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, they're beautiful. They're maintained as best we can, usually with volunteers. We do work with a group called Greenagers that's based down in Sheffield. Yeah. So we work with them. We have a group of Greenagers kids come in every summer for 3 to 4 days to do some trail cleanup. And, you know, sometimes they'll build little bridges for us. We actually had them on site a couple of summers ago, building a whole new trail along what's called the Loup Brook that runs along the western side of the property. But yeah, the trails are in good shape. And we have trail maps on the front porch of the museum. So if someone stops by and wants to take a hike, you can also download them off of our website. And we also have a number of kind of self-guided walks you can do on the property. We have a Native American interpretive trail that talks about the Mohican history of the land that you can kind of do self-guided. And we also have a kind of Bidwell family history tour that you can do. If you stop by on a day we're not open, you can grab one of those tours, walk around, learn a little bit of the Bidwell history if you can't get inside the house.
No, that sounds, I mean, it sounds like a really nice trip no matter when you come up, because I know you have a period of time that you are closed.
Yes.
So you're currently opening up when again?
So we open up for tours on Memorial Day every year. Yeah. And so all of the tours inside the house are guided. You have to make an appointment, but it's very easy to do. You can call, you can email, all of the information's on our website, on our visit page. But because we have it set up like a house, like Adonijah might have had it set up, we do guided tours through the house. And they're great. They take about an hour. You learn a lot about objects in the house, the family history. They're a small group. There's never going to be more than 8 or 10 people on the tour. And oftentimes it will just be your group. So it's a really personal, I know sometimes, like Aaron said, like they're an hour long tour. Sometimes they'll go longer because we'll have visitors who are just really excited about history and have lots of questions. And so they'll end up chit-chatting for a while. But we're open. So Monday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You can do a tour at either 11, 1, or 3. And we'll do them usually through the end of October, kind of weather.
Nice. Yeah, that's sort of the season, if you will. That's sort of the season. I would be one of those people, Aaron. So I'm just letting you know, when I come on a tour, I will make you crazy. I ask all the questions. It's probably it's my nature and my just love for history. Everyone, we're at the top of the hour, so we're going to be taking a quick break. When you come back, you will be joining me here right on the Morning Drive. My name is Donna Todd Rivers, and you have been listening to us on 89.7 WTBR, Pittsfield Community Radio. You're also watching us on PCTV, channel 1301 on your Spectrum dial. You can catch the first half of this show if you're curious now. You can go to pittsfieldtv.org. Just go to Morning Drive Show, and you'll see this show and all the other Morning Drive shows available for you to watch and listen to at your convenience. I'll be right back in just a few minutes.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
What's going on here?
Combining the miracle of modern technology with the secrets of ordinary street junkies. Producing this.
89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union. Proud to support high school arts and sports programs. Greylock Federal. Opportunity grows here. With locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org. And from Evco Hypnosis. Want to lose weight, quit smoking, sleep better, or relieve stress and anxiety? Evco Hypnosis is here to help you become happier, healthier, and stronger. Call 413-212-0283 or go to evcohypnosis.com. That's EVCOhypnosis.com.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
El condado de los Berkshires se dirige hacia un mañana más brillante y ese futuro comienza contigo. Los Berkshires están al borde de caer en una gran crisis de salud mental debido a la falta de acceso, dejando algunos pacientes, especialmente niños, esperando meses para recibir la atención adecuada. Tú puedes ayudar abogando por ti mismo y por otros para encontrar carreras en la salud mental. Sé un héroe de la salud mental para los Berkshires. Para obtener más información, visita briancenter.org o namibc.org.
Hey friends, if you're looking for some party music, tune in to Polka Express with me, Bill Gustavus, every Wednesday night from 6 to 8, and Sunday mornings from 8 to 10, right here on 89.7 WTBR, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community. And from Tim's Lawn Care, it's almost time for spring cleanups. Tim's Lawn Care can also take care of your landscaping, lawn care, mulching, and more. Tim's Lawn Care, 413-281-4222 and online at timslawncarelandscaping.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the morning drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Morning Drive, and you're actually probably watching it as well. My name is Donna Todd Rivers, and I'll be with you for about another 28 minutes. You have missed the first half of the show, and I'm going to strongly encourage you to get on pittsfieldtv.org and catch the first half of this Morning Drive show. You're listening to us on 89.7 WTBR Pittsfield Community Radio. You're also watching us on Pittsfield TV, PCTV, on channel 1301 on your Spectrum dial. This has been an incredibly interesting show. I'm with Erin Hunt, and she's a curator, and Heather Kowalski, the executive director of the Bidwell House Museum in Monterey. It captures life in Berkshire County in the 18th century. We've covered a little bit about the restoration of the house, how it came to be restored, which is an interesting story in and of itself. And talking a little bit about the walking trails there. There were 194 acres on the property. So there's some great trails there if you want to walk. But you also have a great summer of programming available. So I guess, Erin, we're going to probably turn it over to you, Erin, talk a little bit about the programming.
Well, I'll probably talk about programming.
Oh, go right ahead, Heather.
Introduce you to the programming. So this year, we're actually really kind of focusing on our redware collection. Which is this kind of specific type of pot. Oh, I know. I don't know if I'll take the microphone. So it's this specific kind of pottery that was very, very common at the time. It was something that actually kind of started over in Europe and then was carried over. And we have a really amazing collection that some of the people that we've had coming through who are sort of kind of experts in redware, that's sort of their area. Have said that this is really kind of one of the most impressive collections that they've seen. And so we're really excited to focus on that and to be able to share that with people. And so a lot of our programming, at least some of our programming, is sort of focusing on the redware. So it's a really great kind of introduction for people who aren't super familiar with it to get to learn more. So we're really excited about being able to do that.
Yeah.
But we have a lot more planned beyond that. And Heather
will talk about that.
I have to ask a quick question. What is redware? Does that refer to the clay that's used?
It does. Yeah. And it was something that was made in this country kind of all over the Northeast using kind of local clay. And it was something that was made to be used. It wasn't like the fancy dishware that you see behind us here. It was very much kind of everyday kind of cooking and storage and everything. But it's really fascinating and something that I wasn't super familiar with before starting here, because most places you see a couple pieces here and there, but to really be able to explore this really kind of extensive collection has been really, really great. It's really pretty fascinating.
I'm really interested in it. I did share with you ladies before the show started that I actually collect dish sets. I have a dish room at my house. I know I shouldn't probably publicly say that, but I have like 12 or 15 sets of dishes. Like, it's just really something I find really fascinating. I'm also a potter, so obviously dishes and
Yeah,
so I find it all incredibly really interesting. And the clay up in that area is really, I mean, wonderful clay. It's beautiful clay too in that area.
Well, if you're a potter, you should come to our opening event, which is on the 26th, where actually we have a man named Rick Hamlin, who is a redware potter. So he's coming in, he's bringing his wheel, and he's going to talk about the history of redware while also making some redware. And then he's also going to have people in the audience can make a pinch pot if they want to. So that is kind of our opening celebration event. You know, because we're talking about redware, we're going to do that. So the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend, we're going to do that. And then tours start on Memorial Day. But yeah, so that's, we're starting it off with a redware pottery event. So
that would be really an interesting afternoon.
Yeah, right?
That would be an incredible afternoon, particularly if the weather's nice. They can, exactly. You know, you can go enjoy this pottery split demonstration and then walk the grounds. Exactly. What a beautiful day, right, to start that long weekend.
I know. So we're hoping we're hoping to sell out, you know, and we try to do something a little bit unique every year to open the season, you know, based on what we're planning. And sometimes we do a musical event. This year we're doing the pottery. So we're really excited about that, but we're also going to do a few more events throughout the season related to wet redware. So, we have what we call our summer history talk series. So we usually invite 4 to 5 speakers to come in and talk about various historical topics, usually related to the 18th century or the Berkshires or Massachusetts and New England. And so our first speaker is on June 1st. He's a man named Justin Thomas, and he is like a redware scholar and expert. So he came in and worked with Aaron to look at our collection, help us identify some things that we didn't have makers for or locations for. And then he's going to come in and give a history talk about redware using some of our items as examples. So that's going to be on June 1st. And then we're going to follow that up with 3 more history talks. We have one on June 8th about unlearning Indigenous history by a Professor Alice Nash from the University of Massachusetts, talking about how so much of what we learned as kids, you know, maybe in the 70s, 80s, and 90s isn't really correct anymore. And so it's a whole idea of unlearning some of that history. And then in July, we have 2 more history talks. We have a man named Tim Abbott, who has worked with us before at various Living History weekends. So he's going to come and talk about the Berkshire militias during the Revolutionary War. And he's going to do it in costume on site as somebody playing one of those militias, which should be really fun. And then July 13th, we have a scholar from the University of Pittsburgh who's going to come in and talk about a Unitarian missionary who came through the Berkshires in the early 1800s, trying to convert people to the Unitarian Church. Everybody here is Congregationalist, or they were at the time. It was a lot of Congregationalists. That was what Adonijah Bidwell was. And so he kept a diary, this missionary. So he's going to come talk about that. But yeah, so we do this every summer. We have history talks about various topics. We don't usually have them here. So that's the thing. Like, you can go, we have them at the Tieringham Church, which is just 5 minutes away from us. And then you can always go to the history talk in the morning, come see the museum in the afternoon if you want. But we're excited about all those. And then we have a number of other things happening. We're going to do an herb garden workshop. We have extensive gardens. We're going to do a guided hike in the woods, a meditative hike at the end of July. We work with the Upper Housatonic Valley National Heritage Area that's based down in Connecticut to do a whole walk series in September. So we're going to do 3 walks with them. So we have a lot of fun things planned throughout the summer.
it's a pretty aggressive calendar of things to do, and a lot of diversity in what you're offering. So there is something for everyone. And what I like about your calendar is that the diversity of it allows you to go more than once.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Absolutely.
Yes. You can come for multiple events. And then our biggest event of the summer, which I hadn't mentioned yet, is our Bidwell Country Fair that we're going to do on June 22nd. So we've been doing a country fair here since, I think, 2010 or 2011, since before my time working here. And it's basically just kind of a celebration of history. We invite the community. It's a free day. You know, you can come, you don't have to buy tickets. And we usually invite musicians, local artisans. We have some reenactors who are going to be on site reenacting 18th century people and soldiers. We usually have some food, and it's just a really fun community afternoon. So that's on June 22nd from 12 to 5. Let's see, you can watch. We have a blacksmith who will be here that day. We have someone who's going to be showing broom making, like 18th century broom making, lace tatting, basket making. I feel like there might be one other.
Wow.
Well, we have some that are also tentative.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then, so we have a woman, Diane T. Perez, who does historical musical shows in period costumes. So she's going to be singing about songs about fairs, dressed as somebody from the 1800s.
That's interesting.
So she'll be there. And then we have two other groups. We have somebody called Moonshine Holler and then someone called Oaks and Smith. They're also going to be performing that day. So it's just going to be a really just a fun afternoon. We invite people to come out, just hang out all afternoon if they want, listen to music, look at the different gardens, walk around the gardens. So fingers crossed that it's a beautiful and sunny day.
I was just going to say that. I truly, truly, I'm going to, on my calendar on June 22nd, I'm going to draw big sunshine. So there you go. I suggest everyone do that, right? Just draw a big picture of a sun on your calendar for June 22nd. Is that a Saturday or a Sunday this year?
It's a Saturday. It's a Saturday.
Yeah. So you have a history of doing this country fair. It sounds like you must have people that come every single year.
I probably do. And we do. We really invite the town of Monterey and the towns in Tieringham. Like we say, like, this is your local history. We really want you to come. But also, you know, we want anyone in the Berkshires who's looking for something to do that afternoon. It's very family friendly. You know, depending on the weather, sometimes we'll cut a maze into our fern. Mm. We have some ferns out in the field. We might do that. We always have a scavenger hunt for kids, you know, so it's just, and sometimes a craft table if we have enough people to, you know, staff it. So it's a really fun way to spend your afternoon with your family.
It's a pretty big project, I have to admit. Having organized people and organized events, that's a huge event. So obviously your board helps, of course. The two of you are probably crazy busy trying to put all this together. But is there opportunities for people to volunteer and to help?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. There are opportunities. We were just talking about this. So the staff here is myself and Aaron, that's it. We usually have a couple of interns every summer, and we have a board of about, I think, 17 people, and they're very active. We basically tell anyone who wants to join the board, you have to be able to do things and help out, because otherwise we couldn't do this. So we have a very active board, but we're always looking for volunteers. So particularly for the country fair, if people want to just sit at the ticket desk and like sign people in, you know, and help keep track of who's coming and going, or setting up tables, you know, that morning for different people. We're always looking for volunteers for that. But for any of our programs throughout the summer, you know, whether it's our history talks, signing people in, or helping set up our summer fundraising party, you know, we have all those kind of volunteer opportunities. But we also have opportunities in the gardens. You know, if somebody likes to weed or water, you know, we have garden staff, they can come in and help and do that. And we also have, you know, if somebody is interested in history and loves talking to people, we can always use docents. You know, Aaron is our kind of our head docent. We have one of our board members that does that, and our summer interns will do that as well. But, you know, we would love to have more docents. So if there's somebody who really wants to get out of the house and meet people and loves local history, this would be perfect for them.
I think that would be fascinating to do, quite honestly. I think being a docent would be incredibly fun to do. If you're just listening and just joining in, while you have just tuned into the Morning Drive, my name is Donna Todd Rivers. I've been with you for about 45 minutes. I have about 15 minutes left. You are listening to us on 89.7 WTBR Pittsfield Community Radio. You may have also turned on channel 1301 on your Spectrum dial, so you're now watching us on PC TV. You can always catch the first 45 minutes of this show or any Morning Drive show on pittsfieldtv.org. I'm sitting with two ladies from the Bidwell House Museum in Monterey. It's Erin Hunt. She's the curator. Heather Kowalski, who is the executive director. And we've been talking about the Bidwell House Museum and life in the 18th century. It's really been kind of a fascinating conversation about how the house came to be. And now we're talking about the summer that is rich in programming and opportunities to get to the Bidwell House. And depending on what you're interested in, you might find a different day to go, from what you're saying, with history talks to a country fair. There's just a lot going on. Now, one of the things you did mention in the first half is you mentioned the Mohegans, mm-hmm. or I think we should say is the Mohican.
Right.
Yeah. The people, so I looked it up because I was like, I always want to know what Indian names stand for. So it's the people of the waters that are never still, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So what is, because this house was, you know, built in the 18th century and really we were coming into their land. Yes. How do you reconcile that at the museum and how do you address that?
Well, so what we started doing, something we started back, I think this was maybe back in 2014 or 15, was the Upper Housatonic Valley National Heritage Area got a number of nonprofits and groups together with representatives from the Mohicans, which is now the Stockbridge Muncie Band of the Mohicans. They're actually based out of Wisconsin now. And so they started getting together, having regular meetings with them about how to tell some of their story. With, you know, there are no monuments, you know, everybody just came in, you know, there wasn't, you know, any sort of like anything left behind that would be obviously Mohican. And so they wanted us to basically come in and say, like, we're on this land, we should be telling this story. And so we worked back in like 2017 with the tribe and put together a walking tour on the property with signage, like weatherproof signage that basically tells the history of the Mohicans in this area, and then how they used agriculture, how they used land management, how they lived here. So you can learn about the fact that there were Mohicans, not necessarily living full time on this land, but it's very likely that here in what was then Township Number One or Monterey Tierringham was part of like their winter hunting ground. So it's very likely they had to spend time here in these woods, potentially on this property. And so we have made that a part of our story now to make sure that people understand that, you know, while the Bidwell family might have started living here in the 1750s, this had been somebody else's land long before that. So we have incorporated that into our story.
No, and I think that's incredibly important because it's really part of our American history. So Erin, I always ask this of curators. I think I've asked this, Erin and I have talked before, she's done some curating in another museum. How do you even start to decide, like, what, because I mean, you have all these great history talks, right, with these incredible people coming in and chatting, like, how do you know what to do each summer and what you want to talk about? And it's fascinating to me.
Yeah. So here, it's really been the last couple of years where we really started doing kind of, you know, themes for the summer and kind of shows for the summer. And so it really depends on, I mean, because there, like you said, just so much, like, it's sometimes hard to pick.
Yeah.
Last year we focused on our textile collection, because we have this really amazing quilt collection. And I just really wanted to highlight that and share that with people. So we ended up kind of going down, the textile route with the Redware collection, where we do have really one of, you know, kind of the best collections around, being able to really highlight that. And also we had some kind of a long-standing exhibit of the Redware here in this room, with some interpretive panels that really just needed some updating. And so we figured it's great, you know, great opportunity to kind of do all of this all at once. So there's definitely, you know, there's a lot of things to think about, and but we're really excited to be able to kind of work with the Redware this year. And really with any kind of theme that we pick, there are also just so many amazing speakers and scholars and everything. Yeah. So it's really great to kind of bring in some new speakers each time. So
yeah. Well, that's true. Even researching the speakers, I guess I really would love my listeners and watchers to understand that. And these, you know, these exhibits, whether it be at the Bidwell House Museum or anywhere else, you know, anywhere else, a Berkshire Museum, anywhere else, it requires an enormous amount of research to pick, you know, sort of the right topics and the right speakers, the right mix. It's just it's a lot of work. You know, we go in and we spend that hour or hour and a half and we enjoy, you know, the fruits of your labor. But I think to understand what happens in the back to make it possible.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where the magic happens, right? I'm always appreciative of it because I have this unique opportunity to speak to all of you and learn more about what you do, which is why one of the reasons I do these shows, because there really is a lot of work and research that goes into, you know, someone sees this beautiful exhibit of Redware and they're like, oh, in an afternoon, I just got to put that together, right? and it just doesn't work that way, does it, Erin?
No, it doesn't. And as much as I procrastinate things, it doesn't work.
I mean, it certainly helps that we are, you know, we have this time in the winter, you know, once our programs kind of end, and we usually have some programs in November too. Once they end, we have some time to really like sit down and like look at the collection, do some inventories, think about themes that we want, do the research. But I mean, I'm, you know, I start folders in my email every year of potential future speakers, you know, and Aaron and I are always sending each other stuff. Like, oh, I came across this person. They sound really interesting and we'll save it. And sometimes that will help you come up with a theme. You'll think, oh, well, I came across these speakers about this particular art. Let's maybe try to see like how our, you know, what we have in our collection. And we do have a really interesting early American collection of, you know, so we haven't decided what our theme is going to be for next year, but we have a lot of avenues that we can go.
I was going to ask, but I won't do that because I just rather have you on next year instead.
Exactly. Yeah.
There you go. So one thing I do want to address though, and talk about is your blog series, the Bidwell Lore. So I know it came out right around COVID to sort of address the COVID issue.
Right. That's
But I think, honestly, I think it's such an archive of incredible articles in the history of the life of not only the Bidwell House, but of the area. So who wants to tell people about the blog series?
I can do that. So and really the blog series came because of COVID. So, you know, we had the lockdown in March, everybody was staying home. I was, you know, having conversations with our very Aaron and our a couple of our board members who do a lot of history research for us. And said, you know, why don't we just start an email newsletter? You know, we're not going to be in the office. We knew that our 2020 season was probably going to be like mostly canceled, maybe on Zoom, you know. And so we just started doing that and we had a lot of information. But I will say I have to give some credit to a man named Rick Wilcox. So he was the Stockbridge chief of police for like 30 years. He's a local historian. He knows so much about local history, and he's done so much research about local history and spent so much time in the Stockbridge Library. And so a lot of the content for this blog series has ended up coming from Rick because he loves local history. He loves writing articles about it. So we, you know, started putting together this whole list of potential articles, but we wanted to start with the family. So we started writing things about the family and Adonijah and then his four children and then some of their children. And it's carried us now for 4 years, basically. So it's been great. And we've had such amazing feedback from people who just, you know, read it religiously every week and love what they learn and love learning about the local history because we're able to wrap so much of history of like the southern part of the Berkshires, you know, here in Monterey, over into Stockbridge and Great Barrington. And it's been really, really fun to put together. But I will say, I have to give Rick a lot of credit because he has helped us a lot on that.
And just for a little context on Rick, he's on our board.
Yes.
And he's also a Bidwell descent.
Yes.
And that's where his involvement came from.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I have to tell you, it's quite a catalog of information. You don't normally see that. And I think the bigger kudos to give you is that you didn't stop it.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. And it just, we had so much to say and we were literally just, we had a meeting over the weekend and we were talking about like a potential like long-term topic coming up. I mean, right now what I'm doing is replaying some of the old ones just because we've had so many new subscribers since we started it back in 2020 who wouldn't have been here, who might not have gone back and reread the beginning. And so, you know, we're not doing it weekly anymore. We're doing it every other week, but it's still really fun. I'm still getting feedback from people who say, oh, I don't remember reading this the first time around. This was really fascinating, you know, or I didn't know that about local history. So so it's great. And we're going to keep doing it as long as we can, because I feel like it's a great educational tool for us.
Well, it is. And I think it's also for students who want to learn more about local history. I think that's incredibly important. Yep. So if you're out there listening and you have a young student in your life who has to do that local history project that we all had to do, I would strongly suggest the Bidwell House Museum and maybe getting into the blog series, the Bidwell Lore. I think there's a lot of information there that could be used for an incredible local project, don't you think?
Yes.
I think there's quite a bit. How do people access the blog series Bidwell Lore?
So you can do it one of two ways. You can sign up to for our email newsletters on our website. There is a sign up form, so you can do that. And the Bidwell Lore comes out every other Tuesday. You can also come to the website, bidwellhousemuseum.org, and just click on the Bidwell Lore link at the top of the homepage. And that will take you through all of the Bidwell Lores. The first post that's pinned at the top is actually an index that Aaron kind of adds to every time we publish a new one. So you can go through if there's a specific topic you want to read about, whether it's Barnabas Bidwell or Agrippa Hall, which was a long series we did. You can click on the individual links in there and go to that. Or you could just scroll through the blog if you want, if you just have a lot of time on your hands.
Yeah, it would take a while to go through all of it.
Yeah.
Because how many articles and blogs do you think there are?
I think we're up to... There's at least 150. I think.
Oh my goodness.
So yeah, I think I'm on Bidwell Lore like number 170 something, but some of these have been repeat. So I think like unique, I think there's probably 150 different posts.
But I think that speaks to why the Bidwell House Museum is so incredibly important to our history of Berkshire County and capturing the life of not only the 18th century, but all these, you know, other topics. Right. And other history pieces that relate to this home and this family. I mean, it goes, if you can write that many blogs, right? Right.
Yeah.
It says something about the history.
It does. It does. And I feel like that, you know, the Bidwell family, it might not be widely known, but they were connected to so many other people and so many important things happening in the Berkshires in the 18th and 19th century. So it's been really amazing. And we still have more stories to tell about some of the other grandchildren that we haven't even told yet. So
I see a book in the making, just saying.
I know that we've been told that before.
I see it happening. It might be a great just saying, Heather, could be a good fundraiser. So we just have about 3 or 4 minutes left. So I do want to make sure that people know the date that the museum opens.
Yes.
How they can make reservations for tours. So can you cover that a little bit?
Sure. So the museum opens for tours on Memorial Day. So that's Monday the 27th. And you can either call the museum. It's 528-6888 or email Aaron at bidwellhm2@gmail.com and make reservations that way. So call or email. And then you can also go to the website to learn about all of our programs. The Bidwell Country Fair is on June 22nd. So that's one that I invite everyone to come to. But yes, bidwellcountrymuseum.org /events. And so you can look through, right now we have all of our history talks listed and our opening weekend program listed. We don't have the country fair up yet, but that should be up in the next day or two.
Okay. Now all the history talks that we talked about, the two in June, the two in July will be listed as well.
They're listed on the website right now. Yep. Yeah.
They're all pretty fascinating. Picking and choosing would be difficult.
Yeah.
So what days of the week is the museum open? So if people want to start planning.
It's Monday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can book a tour at either 11 a.m., 1 p.m. or 3 p.m. on those days.
And Aaron, the tour should be an hour unless you get someone like me, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a restriction on the size of the group that you like to work with, Aaron?
We try to keep it under 10 people just because so many
of the rooms are so small. Okay. It really kind of, it's a much better experience with a smaller group.
Yeah. If someone has a larger group, we can definitely work with that and kind of split it up. You know, we do have people coming through, you know, doing group tours and everything, and we can definitely make it work. But ideally, we try to keep the number, you know, the number on the tour on the lower side just because it's a better experience for everyone.
All right. So my suggestion for our itinerary for the day, don't you love this, is to grab one of the history talks, unless you're going June 22nd to the country fair, then that's a whole day all on its own. So I would suggest history talk, then over to the property, then a nice little picnic lunch, and then a walk through the trails. What do you think, girls?
Yeah, perfect. That sounds great.
That's a beautiful day up in Monterey, right?
It is. Exactly. Exactly.
It's a beautiful day. I have so enjoyed our conversation, Aaron and Heather, and thank you so much for bringing the Bidwell History House Museum to me and to my listeners. It's a pretty awesome place.
Well, thank you for having us. We've been very excited to talk about it today.
And I'm so glad, too. So it's a little in the woods. It's a great ride. I don't want to hear anyone say that it is a day trip because you can make it a day trip. So it's worth your time and effort to get out to Monterey and see the Bidwell House Museum. Thank you, everyone, for being with me. It's been such a joy. You've been watching Morning Drive. My name is Donna Todd Rivers, and I'm looking forward to being with you again. Until then, start making those plans to have an incredible summer here in the Berkshires, because there's lots to do, and I will bring you more to do soon. Everyone, have a great day. Talk to you soon. Bye.